Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, we are here live for the End Zone Talk Show here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and King ATLian, Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
I'm exceptional, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Just getting ready for that big Christmas tree holiday there coming up next week, as we're all preparing for, or Hanukkah, or whatever you may have coming up. No matter what, there's a chance you have a holiday coming up. But tons of stuff coming up on the show. We're going to talk a little bit about Jay Cutler and Mark Trestman in Chicago, John Gruden's new contract with the Falcons. We're going to go over that Steelers loss, or the Steelers win, actually, over the Falcons, and how that could play into things, and how Atlanta could still make the playoffs. But, you know, first, as always, we like to jump into our picks from last week, and I believe I updated the standings correctly. But the games we picked last week was Pittsburgh at Atlanta, Arizona at St. Louis, Miami at New England, and Dallas at Philadelphia. Now, basically, Coach, you added another victory to your lead over Reggie at the moment, and I'm just hoping to finish at 500 at this point, with Pittsburgh picking up the victory, Arizona getting the Thursday night one, obviously New England boat racing Miami, and Dallas picking up the victory over Philadelphia. Actually, all these games were pretty good, with the exception of the second half of the New England game.
Right. There were definitely some good games.
Yeah, very good.
They definitely were. And updated standings for all those who are playing at home, because I know everybody has their – we're working on getting some dry erase boards that everybody at home can play along with us, maybe. But the updated standings, Coach, you are at 33-23. Reggie, you are 30-26. And I am the flip side of that, 26-30.
Yeah, Coach trying to run away with it. I'm going to have to tighten up this week.
Like I said, I'm just looking. I'm hoping that I can I guess I got to go 4-0 here to get back up to 500. But we will jump right into this week's games, and we will start with Minnesota at Miami. Coach, who do you like in this one?
You know, again, that's one of those tough type of games to pick, because both of the teams are somewhat inconsistent. But you know what? I think I'm going to go with Miami in this game. I think they have more to gain at the game than to lose, so I'm going to let Miami be my pick.
Well, each week I try my best to try to pick games that I either think are going to be really good or that are really hard to pick. And these were the ones who – or actually the Minnesota-Miami, I flipped a coin between that one and another one. But, Reggie, who do you have?
I'm with Coach. I'm going with Miami, but only because the game is in Miami. And that, I think that gives them a little bit of an edge. Teddy Bridgewater is playing lights out right now, and he's starting to find his groove. So I don't think it's going to be a blowout, especially with Miami coming off that big loss last week. I think they'll bounce back this week at home. So I'm going with Miami.
Yeah, Bridgewater being the feel-good story from the draft, as far as he's just a good kid. He was given a chance. You know, they moved back into the round to grab him. He's my favorite rookie quarterback to watch right now. I actually have Minnesota in the game just because of that. But the difference that Ryan Tannehill has made in the last 4 or 5 weeks, suddenly he's playing like a pretty good quarterback that if they add a couple more weapons in this draft, Miami may actually challenge New England for the division next year.
Yeah, somebody pulled his coattail. I think Matt Moore was always kind of behind him as that possible guy once he got hurt. But I think somebody must have pulled his coattail because you're right, he has been playing a lot better lately.
Well, I would have to say that maybe Dan Marino had something to do with it because he's been playing pretty good ever since Marino took that office job with him.
You know what? That may have something to do with it as well.
I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
We'll go to the next game, and Reggie, we'll start off with you on it. We have the Seattle Seahawks going to Arizona to take on the Cardinals.
Well, considering the Cardinals just picked their quarterback up off the street yesterday, I think I saw him walking down my neighborhood block, and the magnitude of this game, I don't think Arizona's going to go away because they win and they win home field throughout. I just don't think they're going to do it against the Seattle defense that's playing overly confident right now. So I'm going to go with Seattle.
Yeah, I do believe that guy was on your city block. He almost hit me with a newspaper. He has a good arm. Coach, who do you have?
I want to take Seattle as well. I don't think that Arizona has enough to match up with them personnel-wise right now.
Yeah, you guys know how much it pains me to give Seattle credit. And as much as I would like this to be a homer pick, I'm going to just purposely be different just because I have nothing really to lose at this point. And I would love to see Seattle not in the playoffs this year. So I'm going to take the media hat off and say from the fan perspective, I got Arizona in this one.
Hey, I'm pulling for Arizona, but I'm being realistic.
Exactly. I'll go with the fan vote this time. Although, if you look at my picks, it looks like I do it a lot. But next game off the block is the Denver Broncos at the Cincinnati Bengals. I've actually got Cincinnati in this one, which would be a and I'll also, in the process, give a shout-out and virtual high-five to not only friend of the show Connor Christian, but friend of the show Icky Woods. I'm going Cincinnati on this one, mainly because it's at home, and I feel like Andy Dalton's due for just ridiculously just crazy game. Coach, who do you have?
You know what? It's always tough to beat Peyton Manning. And they're playing in Cincinnati, correct?
Yes.
I'm going to have to stick with Denver. I still feel that Peyton can pull. If injuries begin to plague the game, I still think that his presence on the field makes underachievers overachievers. So I'm going to take Denver.
All right, Reggie?
I'm with Coach. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I would have been a Cincinnati guy had they have not lost. They've lost so many pieces on defense. I mean, Burfict is out for the year, and they just kind of haven't been playing the way that they. I know minus the game last week. Andy Dalton just doesn't do it for me. Not against Denver. I think it's a shootout at best, but I definitely think Denver pulls it out.
All right, and I guess we'll have to turn to the fourth game and see if we're going to have a homer pick there. And Reggie, we'll start with you, just for obvious reasons. The Atlanta Falcons are going to go down to the other dome in the South, the Superdome, to face the New Orleans Saints. Even though I'm pretty sure I think you're going to go with the home team here, who do you have in this one?
Oh, absolutely going with Atlanta. They know when and we're in. There's been a different feel despite some of the trash talk coming out of New Orleans. Atlanta has been very quiet, and that should scare New Orleans. So I think they're going to go down and kind of shock some people. And I'll tell you this, I don't be surprised to see a Carolina-New Orleans type of game.
Yeah, that could definitely happen. Coach, who do you have?
First of all, I expect to see a Carolina-New Orleans type of game. Here is going to be the key to that game, believe it or not. And I'm going to be very careful in how I pick this, and I'm only doing it based on personnel. I think that you will have some brawls in this game. I think it'll be an all-out, game type of thing to start the game. If guys don't get ejected and you can kind of play it healthy, I'm going to have to go with New Orleans in this. And the only reason I'm going with New Orleans in this is I think that the Falcons still cannot get off the field in third down.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree there. So let's see. If I go Falcons, then we're going to homer out, aren't we?
No, he's coach.
Oh, yeah,
New Orleans.
That's
yeah,
right.
I'm going to New Orleans. And trust me, I won't be surprised if the Falcons win it, okay, because they're going to be playing off a lot of adrenaline. They have a lot to lose, and I think they put themselves in a very tight situation. But if they're not going to pull off these next two games and get to the playoffs, they're going to be a hard team to stop just based on the way they go in. But I think just right now, based on if you lose one or two pieces on the offensive side of the ball of Atlanta, it can swing some things. And I think that when you look at New Orleans' offense against Atlanta's offense and defense against defense, I just think right now New Orleans, they have one or two players ahead of them right now in the injury department that can help, that can make a difference.
Okay, so no matter what, there won't be a homer pick this week. But I guess for the people that are keeping along at home, you can mark this one down. Is I got the Atlanta Falcons in this one. And based off of the way that they played the Green Bay game, based off the way they played, I was there to see it live Sunday, like you were, Reggie. The way they're playing right now, they're playing like they actually want to win this and want to be in the playoffs. Whether they're doing it for Smitty, whether they're doing it for more money, whatever the motivation is at this point, I think they're doing it for the city of Atlanta because they realize that they are the best team and they give the city the best shot at a championship right now. I got Atlanta going down there and winning this one. And then, obviously, I'll save my pick for next week next week's show. But to recap, you guys both have Miami. I have Minnesota in the first game. You guys both go Seattle. I go Arizona. I seem to be the one that sticks out mostly here. I have Cincinnati. Both of you guys had Denver. And Coach goes New Orleans and goes rogue on us. And we both had Atlanta, me and you, Reggie. So we'll see how those shake out. It's okay. Luckily enough, the most any of our listeners know is maybe our Facebook profile or our email address, so we don't have to worry about them.
All
the hate mail gets filtered.
Bring it on. I love it.
Yeah, and again, guys, I won't be surprised if Atlanta goes out and wins the game. You know, the thing is can Julio's hip hold up? Can Roddy White, can his hamstring, can they hold up? Can Harry Douglas be in the game long enough? I just think right now on the receiving side of the ball, Atlanta's just struggling a little bit with the health issue.
There was nothing wrong with Julio. Julio could have came back in that Green Bay game. He certainly could have played last week. They saved him specifically for this game. And considering the fact that that Peyton did the change up with the secondary, he's got fresh new rookies out. Man, these guys are going to eat them alive. If they can give Mac time to throw, I'm telling you, it'll be a 41-10 type of score. Trust me.
Wow. Okay.
But I meant by it'll be a Carolina-New Orleans game. This will be a blowout.
Right. Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Atlanta wants to make a statement. You can see it in their eyes. You can hear it in their talk, and you can watch it on the sidelines. These guys are primed to make a statement.
Well, we will have to definitely wait and see on that one. But
I will be there, obviously. On the Falcons sideline, so look for the helmet.
I already knew you were going anyway, but you and Mark and a lot of the Falcoholics are going. Big trip, right?
Yeah, we're actually down there tomorrow. Big Sweet is doing his birthday party on Saturday at the club. For anybody who's going to be down there listening, there's a club on Bourbon Street called Crazy Corner that he's going to be doing his birthday party from this year. Ryan Cameron and some other guys will be there as well, so it should be a good time.
Yeah, he does have the birthday coming up. I did see that, and I hate that I won't be in New Orleans to help celebrate that one, but I'll definitely catch him at the Panthers game, and I guess we'll have to catch up then. But as we jump into our first big topic here, Adrian Peterson, or at least the Players Association, has filed a lawsuit challenging the decision that was handed down about Adrian Peterson, and they have filed this to the U.S. District Court of Minneapolis. Now, as super important as that sounds, basically all they're doing is challenging the ruling and, you know, trying to make sure that he's getting fair treatment.
Yeah, I think the big thing that came out of this, and I'll allow Coach to speak on it more in depth because he understands that side of the world a lot better than I do, but just from what I read, the big thing that's being challenged is apparently Adrian was promised that he would only serve a 2-game suspension if he had gone in and basically pled to this this charge, and then the NFL came back and said, oh no, we're gonna, you know, maybe April of next year. So they kind of threw the book at him when apparently they have evidence that he was only offered or told that he would serve a 2-game suspension.
Coach, I agree with Reggie that I know you know a lot more about this and at least the way it's worded in the language. So I'll turn it over to you at this point.
Okay, well, let's first back up into where the bigger issue is in all of this. Yes, it was, you know, the NFL has had a lot of not-so-kind media situations, but it all stems back to the CBA. And if you remember, there was a big fight about the length of this CBA. I think one of the biggest issues that come out of this is the fact that when you're talking about the policy on the code of conduct, and I've actually read that actual excerpt out of the policy that when we're talking about the thing that happened in Miami, it's long in the tooth. We're talking about a 10-year contract that basically umbrellas the policy. It doesn't give any specifics on it, but the problem with it is that it's a long process, and it still gives the commissioner a lot of power.
Yeah, it does, and even with the owners that met the other day to make a few more decisions and everything, the main one that they did basically says that a committee, and especially this other appointed guy by Goodell, will pretty much handle a lot of the decisions, with Goodell being the guy when you make your appeal, he'll be the final guy you appeal to. And
I'm sorry, Jeremy, it's your arbitrator. That's the person that you're talking about. And the problem with it is that what the NFLPA wants is, you know, an outside, uninfluenced arbitrator. Unfortunately, that's not what they have in front of them. They have someone who constantly has dealt with the NFL and kind of has leaned their way a lot of times. But, again, with the CBA, and some of the things they got into it over, the owners and women out on this, and they have 10 years to work with it.
Right, and as far as Adrian Peterson, him getting back on the field, I think he should look forward to next year. He's not going to get back on the field this year, obviously. There's only 2 games left, and Minnesota's not going to be in the playoffs or anything, but if I'm not mistaken, he only has like a year or so left on his deal.
Yeah, which is why I think last week when we talked about who stays and who goes, I think he finishes out there, but I think he goes on and moves to Dallas. I can see him in Dallas.
Yeah, you and Jerry Jones, I believe. But, you know, we'll try to keep a better update on just as we hear things about this. It seems to – it's unlike the Ray Rice case that seemed to change every 72 hours or so. This one seems to drag out a little more. I think the NFL is trying to be very careful in how they handled this one. And, you know, only time will tell as to how this is going to shake out.
Right, right.
And then the next thing I wanted to hit on was – everything I've heard from a lot of media people, and not the ones who make up things, usually the ones that are pretty straight up, are leaning towards the Oakland Raiders as they pursue Jim Harbaugh, whether they get him or not. More than likely, there's going to be a full house cleaning with even GM Reggie McKenzie and possible interim head coach Tony Sparano being let go. Do you think this helps or hurts the Raiders?
I personally feel like, you know, it's kind of a bit of a bad thing for Reggie McKenzie, considering I was talking to Coach a little earlier where I noticed that the Raiders will have about $60 million in cap space next year. I think that's all because of his doing. You know, he was the guy that came in, and Coach used the term as a Turk, came in and kind of cleaned house and got them in a great financial position. And now, you know, somebody else is going to be allowed to come in. I did notice that Michigan offered Harbaugh that 6-year, $48 million contract, which would make him the highest-paid coach, college coach, even over Nick Saban. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if he even listens to that. I know he's told several people that he wants to stay in the NFL. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out and who they're going to go after. I know he's probably the number one guy, but Reggie McKenzie, I think, is getting a bad deal personally. I think he should be allowed to finish what he started. But I mean, who knows? We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you go look at historically what Oakland has done as an organization, they've gone through a lot of coaches. I mean, they had a plethora of names to come through that organization as well as GM. And I think that's part of the problem. I think that at some point the organization is going to have to take a good hard look at internally what they want to do, how they want to do it, but more importantly, where is the loyalty going to finally – the line of loyalty is going to be drawn so that you can start building upon it. Because I don't think anybody's had an opportunity to give it more than 2 or 3 years to see the fruits of their labor, if you will.
Well, Reggie, let me pose this to you. If Atlanta goes through a similar house cleaning as supposedly is rumored, are you okay with Reggie McKenzie taking over the GM reins?
I am. If he's the personnel guy that I'm hearing that he is, then yes. It's definitely going to have to be a situation where, you know, he'll come here to Atlanta and he won't come to Atlanta with the same type of scenario. I think Atlanta was number 8 on that list with having just before they make all of the obvious cuts that I think they should make. They're coming in at about $30 million under the cap. With a pretty good situation. So I think him with the right coach could come in here and definitely do what we need to do in Atlanta to win. So, yeah, I would be fine with it.
Yeah, me and Coach were talking about this right before we came on. And not only would I welcome him to any team that I cheer for, especially the way he drafts and just looking at the work that he's done out in Oakland, he's done a phenomenal job. So if he just happens to be just a casualty of the war here, you know, that's kind of unfortunate for him and for Oakland that if they don't recognize it. But, you know, we'll have to see how it all shakes out. But I would imagine if they land Jim Harbaugh that McKenzie will be out and they'll find a GM more to counteract and balance Jim Harbaugh's coaching.
Right. I will be – honestly, guys, and I said this before to some other circles and maybe on the show – I will be really surprised to see Harbaugh turn down that Michigan deal. I really would. I mean that Oakland, yeah, is kind of the front runner for where he's apparently going to land. But whomever gets him needs to give up draft picks or will have to give up draft picks to trade for him. And I think that's going to be a little bit too expensive for an Oakland, for instance, who needs all of their draft picks to rebuild. So I wouldn't be surprised. Six years, $48 million is a lot of coin to turn down as a coach.
I agree 100%. I think that he takes the Michigan job, and I'll simply tell you why. One, he's going to make comparable money to the NFL, if not a little bit more. Two, he will have a 6-year deal, and I'm sure that probably on the back end of that deal with the last 2 years, he can opt out of it if he likes. But for 4 of those 6 years, he'll most definitely be in a safe place. And that's not to take anything from Coach Harbaugh at all. I'm just saying that's why it's so difficult for those guys to come from college to the pros because, you know, even with a bad season, it's not a win now. They have more than enough time to build. And with the way the playoff system is running now, over the next 6 years, surely he'll put Michigan in it at least 50% of that time in the running. So that's enough for him to most definitely take a hard look at Michigan.
Well, I think the key things, at least from what I've heard and just my own personal opinion, as far as the key word in the whole Jim Harbaugh to Michigan thing is leverage. He used Michigan before to get a pay raise. I think he's doing it again now because all it's costing them is a few minutes of their day and a little bit of ink out of a pen just to say, here is an offer on the table that we might send his way. I think he's actually leveraging trying to get a pretty good contract with Oakland.
Yeah, again, yeah. I think Oakland's going to throw some money at him if they decide to go that route. But, again, do they have it? Is it going to be too expensive to give up the trade, the draft picks, and all of the things that they need to continue rebuilding that team? Is it going to be worth it? And that's what it's going to come down to. How expensive is it going to be for them to get him away from San Francisco?
Yeah, I agree, Reggie. I don't think Oakland is going to make that type of move just because of looking at what they've already had to do with Mr. McKenzie and cutting the player salaries back. So even if they've made the room there, that money has nothing to do with the with being able to attract a coach. And again, look at what happens to them historically. Unless this coach is going to get a 5-year deal and 3 of those years are going to be guaranteed, it's going to be hard for any coach to go into Oakland and just turn it around when the trend has been only maybe 2 or 3 years max. And the coach is actually staying there.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to figure out something, all those teams involved, especially out there, San Francisco and Oakland, which will be something to watch in the next couple weeks besides the playoffs. Next big issue really is DeMarco Murray had surgery on his left hand earlier this week, and all signs point to he's going to play. Do you guys think he should play?
This is who now? I'm sorry, Jeremy.
DeMarco Murray.
I think he should. I think he's playing for a contract year. It's a contract year for him. I mean, and that's kind of been the knock on him is you know, he can't stay healthy. I whether or not he stays in Dallas or not, you know, he's on a mission from a yardage perspective. There's some personal things that he's trying to accomplish with his numbers to get that coin for next year. And again, you just hand the ball off. I was watching him in some earlier segments on ESPN today, where he was trying to catch the ball out of the backfield, and he was one hand catches. Obviously, he's not going to be able to do that in the game. But certainly, if you hand it off to him, it's his right hand. It's not his left hand. He's still DeMarco Murray, with you know, from the waist down. So, yeah, I think he should, especially now. It's a contract year for him.
Yeah, he's going to play. I mean, that's it, point blank, flat period. He's going to play. I mean, if Mr. Jones will have his quarterback play with a broke back, DeMarco Murray is going to play with a broke hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah, who was it? Terrell Owens, who played in the Super Bowl with, like, a fracture in his leg or something like that?
Yeah, but that was for Philadelphia. But, yeah, I mean, again, these guys, when they're passionate like that, and he knows – that this next contract is the one that's going to carry him into the sunset, he's got to do it. He's got to perform.
Yeah, he definitely does. And from one kind of odd injury situation to another, in what has to be considered just a weird stroke of luck for RG3, Colt McCoy got injured, which I'm not saying it's good that he got injured, but it's a neck-related injury that would take up to 2 or 3 more weeks to heal, so that's why they went ahead and put him on the IR. But suddenly, whether Jay Gruden likes it or not, RG3 is right back in the picture.
Yeah, this is one of them situations where, you know, Gruden put his foot in his mouth and had to go back to him. And Coach and I had some dialogue about this earlier that, you know, now you got to kind of stick with either both of these guys now because, you know, you're in a situation. So, I mean, it's going to be – I'm hoping to see RG3 kind of step up and show what he's capable of and shake off whatever has been going on with him these last, you know, few years or whatever. But that was surprising because there had been some talk that he would even get skipped over and they would go back to the third stringer or whoever it was after RG3.
Yeah, I would like to say, I would like to, in part of this, this is a bad marriage, but you do what's best for the kids. In this case, you have a rookie coach, head coach in Jed Gruden, and you also have the same situation with RG3. So now the fans are the children. You have to do what's best for your fan base right now, plus what you have healthy.
Yeah, this has become quite a soap opera, so to say, and it just seems to get better and better as it plays along. At some point, it's going to get to the fact of whether Daniel Snyder keeps either his coach or his quarterback or both. I think right now he's just got to ride them both and see what happens. And when Colt McCoy is ready to come back, we'll have to see what he does after that. But from one Gruden to another, John Gruden got a contract extension from ESPN, and that's almost an understatement. He got like Jim Harbaugh to Michigan type money. I don't have the figure in front of me, but I believe it's like a 7-year extension that would keep him in the Monday Night Football booth through 2021. All but eliminating him from any kind of coaching job unless they pay.
Yeah, and again, Coach and I had a conversation about this. Actually, myself and Jamie Dukes had a conversation about this, specifically about, the interest from the Falcons' side of the fence. Would they have some interest in bringing him in as a head? So him being all but eliminated from that possibility. Somebody else brought up an interesting point saying that, you know, now his broadcast days will outweigh his coaching days.
Christian.
So this pretty much kills it for him coming back as a coach, I would think.
Come on,
turn that kind of money down.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it all but eliminates John Gruden from taking any coaching job or from, like I said, with Harbaugh, if they're putting a number so high that if you want to come get me, you know, here's my price.
Right, and now, Coach, explain to me how that works.
The fact
that he has signed this deal with ESPN, could he still come in and some team come in and say, hey, we want you as coach? Can he still kind of null that deal and go in as a coach somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. He can still do that. As a matter of fact, you know, I think a lot of times people fail to realize that a lot of these coaches and coaches in general have agents. So when they broker these deals are for long terms, but they have clauses in them. And I'm sure that after the first 3, 4, 5 years of this, if he chooses that he wants to come out of his contract, he'll be able to do so. So he's not locked in just to the point that he has to do that much time. It's just that's the extension of the contract for him. And at any time, if both parties need to part ways for various reasons and/or he has other interests, I'm sure there's a way that he can come out of it after. But he probably has to be commit to the first 3 years of it for sure.
Okay, yeah, I always kind of wondered that, you know, I know there's all kinds of partnerships going on between the NFL and these broadcast booths or whatnot. You know, I was just wondering if and even with, and I'll give you a probably much better solution, or a much better situation, I should say. In the case of Todd Bowles, who is also a candidate for a lot of head coaching positions around, now that Arizona has signed him to that three-year extension, does that take him off the market for a head coach position, or is it that elevation, hey, you can't do a lateral move, but you can move up type of scenario? Does that make sense?
It does, and again, those are the type of deals that exactly what you're talking about. I mean, it's one of those situations where it's all in the language. It's all in the language. A lot of times you will find coordinators who make as much as head coaches if the situation with that organization wants to keep them there. As a matter of fact, that was one of the situations that Mr. McKenzie faced in Green Bay for a lot of years. He had been, you know, diligently seeking and looking for opportunities to move into a general manager role. But again, each time he was put in a position where you know, they put the money on the table, and you can't turn money down. I mean, you know, but then, you know, oftentimes, you know, came to a situation and the deal was able to be worked out. But again, a lot of good coordinators, you'll find that the way it works is that no organization can just come in. You can't just jump ship, okay? You
right.
have to get permission. Each team has to get permission from the league to present something to you. And then they have to go to the organization and say, hey, we would like to entertain interviewing your coach, your coordinator, your assistant for a position in our organization. And then they go back and forth on whether or not it happens. Now, believe it or not, guys, that happens throughout all of professional sports, especially on the football side. No matter what level you're on, whether it's arena, you can't just jump ship. You have to get permission to talk. And then the organization will normally get the call from the general manager, and he'll let you know it's a yay or nay based on what, you know, the upper management has decided at that point.
Okay, so in the case of Todd Bowles, then you're saying it's a situation, and I'm glad you're fleshing this out, because I've had a lot of people ask me about this, and I promised them that I would ask you at the last time I had a chance, like first chance I got. So in the case mm-hmm. of Todd Bowles, what Arizona actually did was say, hey, we have a lock on him as a coach. That doesn't mean we can't entertain it, but it's going to cost you now because we have him under contract.
Absolutely. It'd be no different than the first right to refuse with the player's contract.
Gotcha.
Something along the similar lines as that.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Thanks, Coach, for clearing that up.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, you cleared that up for me as well. A lot of people do ask, and I try to do the best of explaining it, because I told them it's a process, but, you know, now we can fully answer all the stuff they're asking us.
Well, if I can add just one other piece, let's just go back to Mr. Harbaugh, Coach Harbaugh in San Francisco. If you remember, his contract, part of the I guess, dangling carrot, if you will, is that they could actually trade his contract. Normally you don't hear about that, but that's part of the way that they're leveraging his accolades and credentials with their organization to be able to get draft picks and whatnot for their organization.
Similar to what, and we're talking a different sport here, but it was the same type of scenario with the Boston Celtics and the L.A. Clippers with the trading of Doc Rivers over as a coach, and Boston
exactly.
received draft picks in return.
Exactly, exactly. Same thing. It can the only thing different between the players and the coaches is that the players are in a union. So that makes for something a little bit different, whereas in management, you know, coaches are considered far lower-level management.
Tempo, gotcha.
Well, and since we're on that, you know, John Gruden was actually traded from the Raiders to the Buccaneers way back when for some draft picks. So I'll kind of pose it to you guys. I guess, Coach, you can represent Green Bay as far as what we're talking about, and Reggie, obviously, Atlanta.
Okay.
You know, given who you have now, if you had the chance to get a Jim Harbaugh, and, I mean, is he worth a fourth-round pick to you guys, a third round? Two threes, two fours. You know, what do you think is fair market value to bring him from San Francisco to your respective teams?
From my perspective, I wouldn't want to see us trade anybody. Consider at this point, because under the assumption that we are going with a new regime, I think that's what's going to make it attractive to a new team. Is that you're coming in with your draft picks, a chance to put people in the seats, or a chance to put people on the team that you want on the team. So I wouldn't do it either way. But as far as his value is concerned, I mean, I could see a team having to give up a two or a three for him. I think that's what it's going to take from San Francisco.
Okay, Coach.
Okay, from Green Bay side of the mountain, you know, we're in a little bit better shape as far as where we are personnel-wise in depth. But from a general manager speaking side of it, I don't think I would give up anything more than probably two threes and a four for him. Not to say that he's not worth it, but that puts you right mid-range, and it doesn't totally collapse what you need for, you know, 2 years from now if necessary.
Right, and again, to add to that, Jeremy, I don't think if Harbaugh gets traded, I don't think he goes to a rebuilding team, not if that GM is smart. I think he goes to a team that may be right on the cusp. And one team I would throw out there, and you guys let me know what you think, is the Miami Dolphins. I think that they are that team that can maybe afford to give away a couple of picks. They're right there on the cusp of becoming or finding their identity. They haven't been able to find it with Philbin. I think that's the type of team that I would see him getting traded to.
Well, quick trivia on that particular subject. When Harbaugh was coming out of Stanford, the two teams he narrowed it down to were the San Francisco 49ers and the Miami Dolphins. The reason he chose the 49ers is him and his wife and family are all out on the West Coast in the Bay Area, and they actually like the area. Had it not been for the fact that he likes the Bay Area so much, he would have probably been the Dolphins head coach 3 years ago.
Wow, so there you have it.
Yeah, the only thing that has changed now is that he's matured as a football coach. So now I think I honestly, guys, I don't see him. I would be shocked to see him in the NFL next year. With what Michigan is offering him and the opportunity for him to come back to, he can exit. He can kind of have split the tent, if you will. He keeps his foot in the NFL with what he's been able to do in San Francisco over the last couple of years. He goes to Michigan and bumps a lot of those guys out into the NFL, and in 3 years he can come back. I think he does something similar to a Pete Carroll, but in a better situation.
I agree with you, Coach. I think he ends up in Michigan next year.
Well, we'll see on that one as well. But I guess our quick timeout at the second, as many people like to listen in to us, you know, obviously Mark Cooper, our good buddy from Falcoholics, with his upcoming birthday. So a happy early birthday there, Mark. I know he listens in. Have a lot of people listening in. Right now, I believe a good friend of the show, Tina Johnson's listening in. So if you are listening in, we'll give you the shout-out. Appreciate you listening. And tell all your friends. But as we move on, you know, I like to give shout-outs to people that listen to us, especially when we know you're listening in.
Absolutely. They could be doing something better, right?
They could be doing something else. I don't know about better. They could be doing something else.
They're listening to me ramble. Come on, man. What's not better than that?
Well, I mean, you know, because the TV is on here in the studio, and I could give a lot of shout-outs to a lot of people down at the Jacksonville game right now. It is really awesome that they get the Thursday game. Seeing a friend of the show, Jackson DeVille, you know, the mascots there and a lot of the alumni. And this is a big deal down there. They kind of get crapped on a lot of the times by the media. So the fact that they're getting to host a game, even if it is against division rival Tennessee, it's still a big game down there. So I wish them the best, and definitely go Jaguars tonight.
Oh, and I'm absolutely looking forward to that game. I think Atlanta is – in Jacksonville next year. That's one of the stadiums that I haven't been to. So hopefully I'll get a chance to mark that one off my list next year.
Oh, the bank is something else. It's my current favorite, but then again, I've only been to three.
Until you go to Green Bay. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I gotta wait on those September games, though.
Man, Lambeau is by far my first. I love the Dome. Don't get me wrong, but anybody out there listening, you get a chance to ever go Lambeau Field, that is a definite bucket list item.
Well, I was happy, Reggie, that I was able to prep you for that.
Yes, you were. I appreciate that, Coach, because you definitely told me about it, and everything you told me materialized right there. It was an awesome, awesome experience.
Yeah, the only thing I hate that he did not get was that wind blowing down through that hole.
Glad I did not get that. I bought a heated jacket that I did not have to use, fortunately. So I'm glad that although you wished for me to have that part of the experience, that I did not. The snow showers were enough.
Hey, I promise you, the players, Atlanta Falcon players, were jumping up and down like they were in Miami when they didn't feel that breeze come down through there.
Absolutely.
Hey, but Reggie, you should know, with Coach and with us, well, all of us on here, the show, if we say something, it's generally true. So you can usually take it to the bank.
Oh, absolutely. I had no doubt when Coach Hill prepped me for that whole weekend experience, it was everything he said. I mean, and him being up there so much of his career, obviously he knew. So it was a fantastic experience. I really appreciated the way those fans dealt with us out there, man. We had a great time. And as they told me as I was leaving, I am no longer a Lambeau virgin.
Definitely true. But as we talked about a couple other big-time quarterbacks up in some pretty cold places, you know, Peyton Manning had the thigh injury this week where so far in practice, he's pretty much stretches, and then I think he goes to get treatment. And I believe he was sick as well, so he got the IV in the locker room. Are you guys worried about Peyton Manning this year?
I'm not. He's a gamer. I don't think it means anything.
Absolutely not. I mean, Peyton Manning is a veteran, and he knows how to take care of his body. I wouldn't be able to play as many years as he's played. I think he just got a little dinged up, and that just comes with, you know, age. I mean, you know, this, I mean, he even mentioned that himself. But, no, I think he's more than healthy enough to go into this game and play. And, no, he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah, I'm not real worried about it. Although, I don't know, he's kind of had a down year. He's starting to get dinged up a little more. I think it has a lot to do with the personnel, though. I wouldn't be surprised if this was his last year or if next year was. What do you guys think?
I think if he wins it all, I think he does like Elway and leaves. I think he'll finish out his contract and allow Elway to find his replacement. I think they definitely, much like New Orleans, is going to be looking for his replacement this year in the draft. But I definitely think that if he wins another one or finishes his contract, whichever comes first, I think he leaves at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if this is his last year. They can get into the playoffs, win, lose, or draw, and once they're out, I think he'll be done. Because I don't think there's anything else he has to prove at this point. Each year gets tougher and tougher when you talk to the veterans of getting stuff together to go out and perform at that high level year in and year out. So I agree with you, Reginald. I think either the contract comes first or he wins it all, and that's it.
Well, I have a feeling that the next guy we're going to talk about could be available, and he actually played for Denver at one point as well. And that would be one Jay Cutler. I feel like he would be available. He is actually being benched this week for backup Jimmy Clausen. Yeah, Jimmy Clausen is still in the league. A lot of people thought I was kidding on Twitter when I said he was playing. No, he actually plays for the Bears. Mark Trestman actually could be fired by Chicago by the end of the year, but at least for now, he's trying to defend himself by saying it's Jay Cutler's fault and that he can win with Jimmy Clausen.
Well, I tell you what, I was obviously a Chicago Bears fan this past week, pulling for the Bears to beat the Saints. And what I saw out of that quarterback was, well, out of what I thought I saw in a lackluster performance by a team was purely a lackluster performance by their quarterback. I don't think I've ever seen a guy tank it as much as I saw this guy tanking. And I honestly don't feel like anybody's going to touch this guy other than maybe bringing him in as a backup. He's gotten his money, obviously, out of this $100 million deal or what he thought he needed to get out of it. And on top of that, you know, the word is that he's not a very pleasant guy to be around in the locker room. I just didn't see it in him. He acted like he didn't care in that game. So I'd be really surprised to see anybody do anything major to try to get this guy next year.
I don't see where he fits, guys. I don't see where he goes in and he's this impact player. If you notice, if you look at the draft and you look at and you try to grade out the rookie quarterbacks, they all have played relatively well as a group. You know, you've had some situations here and there. But there's no one in the NFL he can go to. There's no one he can go and start right now. And so I honestly think it's just up for him. I mean, again, I don't know where he is in his psyche to accept the fact that he will be a backup quarterback. I mean, maybe he goes to Canada. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to push it out the league. But I don't see him starting anywhere in the league. I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But when I look at personnel across the 32 teams, there's no way he can go and beat that starting quarterback now.
Oh, no. It's been rumored that he would possibly go to Tennessee because he played at Vanderbilt in college. But if you're the Titans, you can draft your next quarterback. Plus, Mettenberger is serviceable at least until you find one.
Right. And then some of the mock drafts we've got early with Titans in at the number 2 pick have them picking up Mr. Jameis Winston, which is definitely, you know, a much better selection, in my opinion, over Jay Cutler. And Jay Cutler's kind of one of those guys that I kind of put in the same boat with guys like Jamarcus Russell, for instance. he's not. It's not due to lack of talent. I mean, the guy's got a cannon for an arm, but he is Jeff George reincarnate. And I just don't think a team would poison their locker room with a guy like this. And I'm like, Coach, I can't. When I scoured over the teams, I couldn't find anywhere short of maybe a St. Louis Rams. But I mean, Fish is not going to put up with that madness either. So I couldn't find anywhere that he fits.
No,
it's just funny
there's no way that he does fit, honestly, guys. I don't see it. And with the fact that you have rookie contracts that last up to, you know, 3 years max, now you can just take a chance on a guy coming out of college that you can develop. I mean, you know, and I think he also looks at the situation, and I want to bring Atlanta back to the table. Let's talk about, is it Mr. Yates, that's the backup quarterback that was from Houston that once started?
Yes.
And so I think he looked at that, too. So I think it's just too fresh in his mind to accept a backup role. I don't think he would accept a backup role unless he was on a team that was on the cusp of constantly being a playoff team or, you know, heading toward the Super Bowl. I just think personality-wise, he doesn't handle that well.
Yeah, Reggie, it's funny that you compare him to Jeff George because that's what I've called Jay Cutler all season to a lot of people. They said, compare him to somebody in the past. I said, oh, he's Jeff George made all the way over. Talent-wise,
yeah,
he's got it.
The only thing lacking is we haven't seen a verbal altercation between him and Trestman on the sidelines. I mean, that's really the only thing that I have not seen. He just does not care. He doesn't care. It shows in his demeanor, his body language. He just kind of throws stuff out there. I mean, he doesn't care, and it's poisonous to the locker room.
Yep, and we'll hit one other issue before we play where will they finish where they are, and we'll play it pretty quickly. Volume 3 seems to be pretty popular, so that's why I keep bringing it back. The last thing I want to really hit on right now, you know, quick news and note, Ray McDonald was released by San Francisco. They finally had enough of his altercations, but the FCC has apparently contacted one Thomas Brady up in the New England area about the F-bombs he likes to drop during games, to which he responded, all you have to do is take the camera off of me and you won't see them.
I agree with that. I've always stated from a fan's perspective that they are softening up the NFL, and it's going to be powder puff football here in a minute. And as much as I love Matt Ryan, for instance, when he got pummeled by, I forget the guy from Pittsburgh, and they called that roughing the passer, that was a textbook hit. I didn't see anything wrong with it, even as a Falcon
right.
fan. But they're just getting ridiculous with this kind of stuff, man. Let them play.
Well, I agree. And you know, we've had this conversation before, Reggie, and I think, you know, football is a violent sport. And there's no question about that. I think what has been driving this over the last couple of years and more especially within the last 2 years is all of the concussions and these injuries that these guys are suffering now. Technology gets them back to the field faster, but the long-term health effects is what they're looking at now. So, I mean,
get to the point of trying to censor Tom Brady's. I mean, see, look, the guy's in the heat of the battle. Things happen, and they're going to happen, and I'm with him. Take the cameras off me, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but you know what? That's just like any other public figure. You know, once you get into that limelight, you know, you say you don't want it, but somewhere quietly you do. But then once you get it, it's not what you thought it was going to be for a long period of time for you. And so, again, that's just one of those things that they talk about. And as coaches, we talk about this every week. Watch what you say. Watch who you talk to. Watch your tone. But more importantly, watch your language.
Okay, golf, I get it. Football, I don't. And that's just my opinion. Okay. Jump on Tiger for doing it. I get that because golf is a quote-unquote gentleman's sport. But football, come on. These are gladiators, man. They're not – come on.
Yeah, he needs to find better words like fudge and son of a biscuit eater.
To be fair, if I ever heard Tom Brady say that, I think they should drug test him. I don't know if he would ever say it that way.
Right.
He's not
doing it in a press conference, and I'm okay with that, you know?
So even in college at Michigan, there's many a good screenshots, or sometimes when they would mic the field, you could hear him 20 yards away down the sideline saying choice words, sometimes blowing up about something. You're like, yep, there's Tom.
Hey, man, I love a man that's passionate about what he does.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why he's the winner he is.
Absolutely. And, like I said, we will get into our favorite game, or at least I'm going to pretend it is. Will they finish where they are? And we'll try to run through these pretty quickly. I tried to come up with four different names, tried to go a little more defense-oriented, except for the one offensive guy who kind of wrote himself into this one. We'll start with Jay Cutler. Does he finish at the Chicago Bear?
No.
No.
Yeah, I'm right there with it. I don't know. I think he'd be lucky to finish this season as a Chicago Bear. We'll move to the next one. The rest of them are all defense. What about Richard Sherman?
Yes. I said
that reluctantly. He's on?
I said that reluctantly, but yes. I think Seattle pays him the money. The guy's just too good. He's a staple over there.
All right, Coach.
He finishes as a Seahawk just due to the fact he is the next coming of a Deion Sanders. He's entertaining. The fans like him, and he produces for that football team. I think he is their secret weapon. He's their franchise face. They're going to lose Marshawn Lynch for sure, probably at the end of this year. So I don't see him going anywhere. I think they give him a long-term contract, and he leaves there as a – he retires as a Seahawk.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this one. I can make an argument either way, but, yeah, I kind of agree with you guys. I think if whether Pete Carroll's there or not, he's become kind of the face of that team. It's Russell Wilson and it's Richard Sherman's team, so I'm going to say he stays. Next one off the block, Clay Matthews.
Yeah, I don't think Green Bay's dumb enough to let that guy go. I think he gets signed as well. He comes from pedigree. I think Matthews kind of stay where they're at until they get up in age, and even still, you know, it's hard to let him go.
You know what? This is the only reason why I'm going to say yes. The only reason I'm saying yes, and yes, they would have let Clay Matthews go, believe it or not. But because Clay plays as a hybrid now, he can go down at defensive end and also play linebacker, that extends his time with Green Bay. And that's why I think that he'll stay there.
Well, I'll throw this out, and then I'll give you my answer to this. I'll throw this out that I never thought that – well, Julius Peppers is on team number three, but I never thought that – what is that other guy?
DeMarcus Ware?
No.
Jared Allen?
Jared Allen. I never thought Jared Allen would leave Minnesota, so I'll say the same thing they do in the wrestling business, never say never, but – if Green Bay's smart, Clay is the face of almost the NFL, not just their team. So as much as it would be cool to see maybe a Matthews reunion, bring them all to Atlanta, brothers, cousins, everybody, I guess we'll just watch Clay from afar.
Well, yeah, don't remind me that we could have drafted him over Parade Jerry.
You could have drafted him and about 12 other guys who have been to Pro Bowls.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of a good segue for you there, Reggie, as the last guy on here. And like I said beforehand, that this may open a wound you may have with your team, or it may be a simple answer. Last guy I've got for this week, Volume 3 of Will They Finish Where They Are, Mr. Sean Witherspoon.
I think it's how he plays it. Talking with him personally, he has some ideas. I think he wants to prove himself. He obviously wants to stay in Atlanta, and I know that personally he wants to be here. But he's got to show that he can stay healthy. And I don't think he gets the monster contract extension that he may have been thinking he would get as a first rounder. But it's just going to depend on how he plays out. This is his contract year, so it's gonna depend on what he's willing to accept from them come the off season.
Okay, Coach.
No, I don't think he stays. I think that Atlanta will hold on to him until they can find better. I think they're going to training camp with him. I think he'll be safe up until that point. But as they look toward trade deadlines, I don't know if he survives it. I just think that they have enough in their linebacking core and some guys that they can pull back off the line. Because if you remember going into the season, they were this hybrid-type defense to begin with. So they'll look at that. They'll look at his health over time. They'll look at the productivity. But I think it's going to be kind of hard to hold on to. But I think they like him. But I think it's going to be hard to hold on to him.
Yeah, as much as my good scenario is with Bartu and Warlow on the outside and you run Weatherspoon and Shimbo in the middle, I don't think Atlanta shares my dream scenario there. So as much as I hate it, because he seems like a real good guy, and I look forward to meeting him hopefully very soon. But, yeah, I think Weatherspoon could be out.
Yeah, I'm pulling for my man. He's a good guy. And he's by far, I will tell you guys this, he's the best linebacker we have. I mean, and so that's another reason why. He's ready now. He's game ready now. And I think that, again, it's just going to depend on what he's willing to accept.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and I know he does a lot in the community and everything. I know he's a good stand-up guy, and I agree. He's the best linebacker on the roster right now. But we'll have to see what either the new coaching staff or the current one does.
Right.
But that's going to wrap it up for our end zone segment. Just on the other side of the commercial break here, we will jump into some Falcon stuff and go over the Pittsburgh game, tell you how Atlanta can win, and we'll also preview the Saints game. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, the King A.T. Alien, Reggie Walker. Almost messed that one up. Sorry, Reggie. And I am Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
From Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And that's right, it's time for the Falcon Zone. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King ATLian, Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy. Doing great.
Great.
We will definitely get into some really fun stuff here in a minute with the Falcons. Some of the stuff coming up. We'll actually hand out the Impact Player of the Week award as well, but let's jump right into the Pittsburgh-Atlanta game. Now, I know you were there as well, Reggie, and the atmosphere was really cool. As far as away teams and tailgating, Pittsburgh throws one heck of a tailgate and party. Was able to hang out with a lot of them, and really that's part of the Atlanta culture to me, is you get down here early and you tailgate and you get to see some of the out-of-town fans it just really kind of brings it full circle as to the experience of being at the Dome.
Yeah, unfortunately, from a fan perspective, it's kind of a bad scenario when you're outweighed or just as even with another team's fans as you are with Pittsburgh, obviously, as well as Dallas and Green Bay and some of the other Giants in the league. So from that perspective, yeah, tailgate, absolutely. Experience, absolutely. But I long for the days, much like my time at Lambeau, where everybody that I see is there for that team, for that home team. So I it's kind of bittersweet for me personally.
You know, Coach, we'll have to get you out to the tailgate, maybe at the Panthers game or something.
Yeah, I got to try to get down at least for one game.
But, you know, overall this game kind of played out one of the two ways I thought it would. Unfortunately, the Falcons didn't get the victory on it. But honestly, though, Reggie, I do agree that just like the Chicago game earlier this year, I felt like representing the Falcons that I was outnumbered 2 to 2.5 to 1, almost 3 to 1 in their fans to our fans. But, you know, at least they were nice about it. And I don't think it actually played into the game because I've been down on the field before, and you really can't hear that much of the crowd when you're down there.
Yeah, but you can see. And that's one of the things that I always worry about, the psyche of this team, being in an atmosphere where, you know, you have to go to the silent count. And if you watch James Stone during the game, he operated out of the silent count a majority of the game, if not all of the game. And that's ridiculous when you're at home. So I it's one of the personal beefs that I have with the fans here in the city. I saw a lot of guys that had Pittsburgh jerseys on over top Atlanta Falcons shirts. I mean, it was that type of scenario. So,
yeah.
From a player's perspective, I know it's got to be kind of frustrating to look up and see that you don't have that support. But, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, again, I like to add, too, guys, and we talked about this, being that, you know, I am, you know, born and raised in Atlanta, as well as yourself, Reggie, and Jeremy, you being from here as well. You know, after the Olympics, it turned us into an international city, and we had a lot of people, not just from, internally in the United States, but around the world, move into Atlanta. Atlanta is that, you know, it's that international city there. So I'm not surprised with the fan base like that. I think that's why it's the way that it is, because of that dynamic that took place in 1996. But even moving forward, I think you're going to see that same dynamics play itself out in soccer as well. You're going to see, you know, we'll have a team here. Some people go to some games, but overall, I think it's going to be dominated by, you know, other cities as you find, even with the Braves, when New York comes into town and play the Yankees and certain teams, you can just expect certain things to happen.
Yeah, and the only deterrent or the only caveat I would add to that, Coach, is, you know, I was also, you know, a ticket holder during the Mike Vick years, and we did not have this. We had the exact opposite. We had fans that were breaking their necks from other cities just to be able to get here to see him play. So you did not have that atmosphere. I don't recall going to a game where Mike Vick played, even when we played Pittsburgh here, where we were outnumbered as a fan base. So I think what that does is it puts a lot of pressure on Arthur Blank as an owner to say, hey, when you start putting a product on the field that commands that type of camaraderie from your fan base, I think you'll see a change. But as long as what we have out there is what we have, you're leaving the door open, wide open, for other fans to come in and take over our stadium. The way I think it's been embarrassing to him as an owner to see whether he's selling tickets or not, the Chicago game as well as the Pittsburgh game.
Well, and since you brought it up, Reggie, we'll kind of quickly segue into that area. You know, we all kind of have business backgrounds, and you know, who is the marketable star for the Falcons? That, you know, back then we could say, hey, come see Michael Vick play. He's this kind of player. Or half the time you didn't have to say it. People go, oh, Michael Vick, I want to come see that. Who's the kind of face of this team, or who could we push to try to get more people to these games?
From a fan perspective, me personally, we don't have him. And that was why my argument, from a coaching perspective, is Arthur Blank's going to either have to bring that player in, or he's going to have to bring that coach in. One of the two. That's why you can't afford to go with another no-name type of coach like a Mike Smith. You're going to have to make a splash either with a coach or with a player, because we don't have him.
Coach, do you agree?
I agree. I don't think there's a marquee player in Atlanta. As a matter of fact, I don't think Atlanta's had a marquee player since Deion Sanders, to be quite honest with you. I think that was their moment in time with that type of player. But I do agree with you, Reggie. I think that you go in the coach's area. And the only reason why I say a coach versus a player is because a coach can give you a little more longevity and can bring you those type of players over time. So I think that I agree that Atlanta has to really, I'm sure they have been doing it. I'm sure Mr. McKay has been doing it quietly, along with Mr. Blank, putting together their short list and putting together their long list of coaches that they want and weighing the pros and the cons. But I think in the direction that Atlanta needs to go now, they need a big-time coach to come in here, especially moving into that new facility and being able to bring those, attract those type of free agent acquisitional players out there so that they can get started and move toward the direction they want to go over the next 3 years.
Yeah, definitely. And me being a lifelong pro wrestling fan, you know, you watch a lot of times, you look at the roster they have and say, who's going to be the next breakout star, you know, the next Hulk Hogan for a lot of people that are familiar with it, you know, those kind of things. And I agree that the last marketable star that Atlanta really had was Dion. And, I mean, Michael Vick, for the most part, was a pretty good draw, but you don't really have that standout star right now. And I don't know that he's, I mean, I don't know who they could go out and get that would make that kind of splash. And this year's draft, so far at least what I'm seeing, if it's not Mariota or Winston and the media circus that they would command, I mean, there's not a Clowney this year. There's nobody they can kind of trade up and try to get to be that face.
Well, I'm going to throw this out, and I'll be the controversial guy on that pick. First of all, going back to the Michael Vick being a draw, I can tell you I was offered massive amounts of money for my tickets back when he was here. So he made this guy a tremendous amount of money. But that being said, that's not taking anything from Dion, but Mike Vick held his own. I will tell you what could do it, and whether it happens or not, and I've talked about it before, sign and trade Matt Ryan for Cam Newton. Cam Newton could be that guy.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think Cam Newton is that guy for Atlanta, I think, because he's a homegrown product. And I think that's probably, when I look at all of our sports teams, guys, and the future ones that we have in soccer, I think the biggest problem that Atlanta has is they don't have a lot of home products on these teams. And as a result of that, you know, again, that helps with your fan base when they know, when you have fans that are sitting in the stands saying, hey, I went to high school or elementary school or worked with him at UPS or what have you before he got to where he is today. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well. I think that I agree with you, Reginald, that Vic did do a great job here. And I think he was that guy after the young Sanders to do so. But with it being kind of short-lived after everything that took place, I don't think they've recovered from that, honestly. From a player's perspective, they have not done that.
No, absolutely. And that goes to another point, Jeremy and Coach, that has been brought up quite a bit with the GMs that have been here. I mean, I've heard this from a lot of several of the fan base. With the large contingency of fans that you have with the University of Georgia, for instance, Atlanta is probably the one team that drafts so few University of Georgia players that I think that's another way they could draw a lot of fans. It start pulling some of these guys that people know onto this team. And why wouldn't you want to draft from Georgia or any other SEC team? It's beyond me, but I agree with that point. They got to get some more guys here because Atlanta is just that type of team or fan base. You know, we're going to respond to those that we are familiar with, and that's why I say Cam Newton is that guy. If you can't get that big coach, you got to go do that sign and trade and bring that guy in.
Well, and it's not just UGA players. It's just the state of Georgia in general that the Falcons just seem to look over all the time because we know Georgia Southern likes to run the ball a lot. Actually, I got to see some Georgia State games this year. They got some pretty good receivers and actually some decent defensive backs that could make a splash. But then, you know, you got Reggie, your Georgia Tech Jackets, of course, always seem to produce great running backs because of the system and for some reason elite wide receivers, which still baffles me, but it still happens. In fact, the UGA guy just transferred to Georgia Tech, but it's always kind of baffled me how Atlanta is one of those teams that just for some reason doesn't take the homegrown talent.
Yeah, it's the $5 million question. I've never been able to understand that.
I mean, because you know, to be fair, in this draft coming up, even though I think he could be a second, third, possibly slip down to the fourth round draft pick, Todd Gurley would be that kind of splashy pick that you could actually build a system around here in Atlanta because everybody knows him.
I absolutely agree, and he was the guy that I was thinking about this year, as well as Jeremiah Tauchu out of Georgia Tech, which I do know that they were trying to go up and get before he was taken.
Right.
And, of course, everybody knows or should know that Julio was not their first choice when they got him. They were actually moving up to go get A.J. Green. So they have apparently made some tries and some attempts to go get some of these guys, but Gurley, I'm with you. Gurley is that guy that they can sneak in here and steal and bring in here that could create a little bit of a splash. It won't be enough, but it'll be enough to start turning some heads.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, and maybe you do know this because you're a Georgia Tech alumnus, how much time does Calvin Johnson have in Detroit?
The word right now, I know he has another 2 years left on his deal, but the word is that Detroit is not against completely cutting him in the offseason because of the cap hit that he has next year.
Will Atlanta have the money to pick up someone like a – let's just say – here's a scenario. Let's play it out from a GM perspective, if you don't mind, Jeremy. Let's take a trade for Cam over Matt, and then do you still have the money in your coffers to go get a Calvin Johnson if necessary?
I think so. I think – here's why. Well, there's two things. Here's why. I don't think you have to worry about the $100 million contract with Cam. Due to his recent injuries, especially this last one, I think that he's going to come in a little bit more discounted than the $100 million that you're paying Matt Ryan. That being said, he absolutely would fit in the cap if he's not looking for what he's getting in Detroit, and I don't think he would be. He's getting $10-plus million a year. I think he knows he's not worth $10-plus million a year anymore. He's probably worth about half that or a little bit over half of that. So, yeah, if he's willing to come off of that $10 million a year price tag, I think you absolutely could fit him in the mix.
Man, I'm glad that not only are we live in this show, but that our listeners can go back and listen as well, because just thinking about that scenario of having Cam as the quarterback and potentially having, you know, keeping Harry Douglas, obviously, but potentially having, you know, Julio and Calvin running up and down the sideline, about half our fan base just hit the floor.
Right, with Todd Gurley possibly as a running back. I mean, come on.
They're completely out of it now.
Right.
I think if you can do a Gurley, Anton Smith backfield with on the outside, you got a Calvin Johnson and a Julio Jones with a Harry Douglas at slot. You got something that you're working with now.
Wow, Reggie, you'll have to make sure that at the Panthers tailgate we bring this up to some people to get some real feedback from some of the fans we hang out with.
Hey, man, I'll be happy to.
Yeah, this will definitely be a fun one. But before we transition into talking about the Saints game coming up, we'll go ahead and hand out the Impact Player of the Week awards. Coach, who would you hand out the award to?
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to pass on this one, guys, because, you know, I was in Philadelphia this week. So I didn't get an opportunity to really look at the Falcons game because, again, we had Dallas and Philly there. So I have to pass this week on that particular game since I didn't get a chance to dive into it.
Not a problem. Reggie, who would you give it to?
You know what? For what it's worth, I'm going to give it to a bunch of people. I'm actually going to give it to that to the defensive front line, and here's why. I think Le'Veon Bell had 65 yards rushing the whole game. Tyson Jackson, those guys were all over the place. They completely eliminated that part of the game for Pittsburgh. They weren't able to smash mouth them as much as everybody thought they would. So I have to give it to the defensive front.
And I would agree, because I spent a lot of the game, especially on replays when I could catch them, trying to see what Croy Bierman was doing, because I had predicted pregame that I was hoping he would have two sacks. Now, luckily, I didn't say that in any kind of recorded effort, but Bierman was actually commanding double teams a lot of times, and he was actually winning a lot of them. But I think that had a lot to do with
Mr. Massaquoi's article in ESPN. I mean, sometimes it's kind of like with Julio and Patrick Peterson. When you get called out by another guy for another team, that's one thing. But when you got a guy on your own team, whether people agree with it or not, that actually said, hey, I don't know why I'm not playing over Corey Bierman. And he mentioned him specifically. That seemed to light a fire underneath him. So we'll see what happens from here on out.
Definitely so. But the guy I'm going to give it to as he did all of last year, stepped up when he was really needed, and with 10 receptions for 131 yards, I think Harry Douglas by far is my impact player of the week.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even though, you know, as you go back through the film now, the pick six that probably decided the game, turns out it was indeed his fault in not finishing a route.
It was.
As we all kind of threw it on Matt Ryan. But again, yeah, the last 3 weeks, I think he has really stepped up and become that guy. And I know in Green Bay he did the same thing. I'm expecting that more on Sunday as well. So yeah, I agree with you on the offensive side.
Definitely so. And I know, you know, for the most part, he's making it real hard to keep Roddy White around in the next couple years, and B, he's making it real hard to give Julio big time money, because he's kind of showing that there's guys on this roster that could play at a high level and not command tons of money.
Yeah, Roddy White, I'll give you. Julio Jones is different. Julio Jones, if you notice, I don't think Atlanta very rarely, if any, went up the field vertically, anything more than about 20 yards. But I definitely agree with you in that, you know, he's going to make it tough for them to, if they're possibly thinking about whether to keep Roddy around or not, he's definitely making a strong case for why not.
Definitely so. And as we are in the last few minutes here, I think producer's telling me there's about 8.5 minutes left. We'll jump into the Falcons-New Orleans game. And we obviously already made our picks with Coach going with the Saints and me and you, Reggie, going with the Falcons. What are you guys most looking forward to with this matchup?
I am looking forward to these receivers against this patchwork secondary that the Saints are touting. They didn't get a lot of pressure on Matt in his first game off the front four. They got some guys that are banged up. So if they don't get any pressure on Matt and he gets the protection that he has gotten here over the last couple of weeks, I think they're going to have a field day against these new guys.
And for myself, I think that I'm looking for the defense to play a better football game. I think that, again, Coach Ryan will have them ready. I think, again, that he's going to bring out some fronts and some stunts that they have not seen. And he's going to really play with Atlanta a little bit.
Yeah, and the two things that really stick out to me, and it's not just because I keep trying to rally behind this guy, but I really do feel like Croy Bierman is due for just some kind of – maybe he can put Drew Brees on the turf enough times to where Drew has to use those Tide packets that he tries to sell us on that commercial. But also because of the fact that I think even though the Saints are currently winning the division, I still think they're a bigger mess than the Panthers or the Falcons, and that they may not even technically be in this race. And Jimmy Graham kind of has a Cutler-like attitude where a lot of times if he's not the focus or it's not 100% positive, his attitude kind of checks him out. I think he'll check out a couple times, and a few interceptions are going to sway this game in the Falcons' favor.
I agree. I think you're going to see a team that you have not seen all year. I think they know that they have already prepared themselves that they are in playoff mode now. They are looking at this as a playoff game, and I think that the Saints will get overconfident as they typically do with Atlanta, and think that they're going to come in and just dominate. And I think they're going to get the exact opposite.
Yeah, and as we said, the scenario for the Falcons is that they need to beat the Saints this week, which would put themselves in a tie with a virtual tiebreaker in their favor, and then they would have to also win out and complete it by beating the Panthers next week, and they would be hosting a playoff game against more than likely Detroit or Green Bay, I believe.
Right, depending upon what happens with this Arizona-Seattle game. It could very well be Arizona as well.
Or Seattle.
Right, either or.
Either way, as I told one of the Falcons front office members that I was talking to, and I won't throw his name out there just for a lot of reasons, but I was like, yeah, this team's going to win out, and I'm looking forward to the first-round playoff game. And he said not only did he like my positivity and optimism, but he agreed. And we're all looking forward to hosting that playoff game here in the Dome.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, as I mentioned earlier, this team believes that. The team you're looking at now believes that they deserve to be playing a playoff game. And I think, again, Atlanta wins this game the way that I think they're going to win it on Sunday, they are going to be an extremely tough team to beat in the playoffs.
I agree. Well, go ahead, Coach.
I'm sorry. I don't disagree. Again, you know, I think this is the true litmus test for Atlanta right now. I mean, you know, will they? You know, you're playing against a rival and you're going off adrenaline, and guys tend to step up in rival games. But then that next game against Carolina also, you know, plays a heavy role. And it's just their road to the playoffs now is going to be much more strenuous than it ever had to be. So this can play in the favor of Atlanta, or it can actually curse Atlanta. It just depends on, you know, what happens in the game and how much rotation they give. Again, I think that Atlanta still needs to work heavily on getting other guys involved in the football game so that when injuries present themselves, there's not a crossing of fingers as much as it is nodding of heads.
Yeah, exactly so. And the main thing to consider in this is whoever wins the NFC South is more than likely when you look at the way the matchups work, whoever wins the NFC South is probably going to win the first round of the playoffs just because of the way the matchups are, which scares a lot of people that somebody, you know, with five or six, maybe even seven wins is not only going to make the playoffs, but probably knock out a really good team in the first round.
Well, you know what? I'll echo Roddy White's statements on this. I mean, I don't understand why everyone is so appalled at what's going on. You had Seattle do the same thing a couple of years ago. You had the Giants to do the same thing not too long ago where they actually went on to win the Super Bowl. And we all know that Seattle, that was the reemergence of Marshawn Lynch when they beat a heavily favored New Orleans team up in Seattle. So this is nothing different. I mean, it is what it is. If they do some reseeding next year like they're talking about, I think that's going to be a travesty because you may not ever see this happen again. Or it could move on to another division. I mean, what are you going to do? It's just the way the cards fell this year.
Well, I absolutely agree as far as that, and reseeding would be ridiculous. But as far as I'm concerned, all you got to do is punch your ticket to the dance. And when you're at the dance, records don't mean anything anymore. It's all about winning games.
Absolutely. You are 0-0 at the moment that the season ends.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. And here's what I'm going to say about the NFC South, okay? Whoever wins the division and goes into the playoffs is going to be playing with a huge chip on their shoulder, okay? They figure that, you know, you don't expect us to win anyway. And I think that's going to be the Achilles heel for a lot of teams that play them, whatever team wins it, because of just that fact. They have nothing to lose in everything to gain. Everybody else still has a regular season reputation they're trying to hold on to.
Right, definitely so. And I agree about the chip on your shoulder. And that's why I welcome it. You know, people that know that we cover the Falcons, I've caught a lot of flack here lately about it as far as they say the things about, well, what if you have a losing record and you win your division? I was like, so? We would win our division. You know, that's more than only 8 teams a year can say they won their division. And only only another 4 can say that they made the playoffs without winning a division. So the rest of the teams are looking forward to a draft where Atlanta is looking forward to hosting a playoff game.
Absolutely. And I will also agree with you guys both by saying this game right here is the definition of what the true Atlanta Falcons team that you have. I think Arthur Blank is going to be watching this one very closely because this is a microcosm of what you actually have and what you need to change.
Definitely so. And, you know, I wish the best for all you guys. Hope you guys have a great time down in New Orleans. Hate I couldn't go down there to help ring in not only the playoff push, but our friend Mark's birthday. Happy early birthday, Mark. Well, I'm going to try to catch you next week when you get back. But you guys got anything else to add?
Just rise up, baby.
Let's see how these peaks turn out.
Just stick it in, Coach. Just stick it in.
Yeah.
Done, Reggie. Until it's done.
All right. Well, like I said, we're going to look forward to this game this weekend. And obviously the holiday season is in full effect. So wish everybody a safe and happy holidays in case we don't catch you till the other side of the break. But for the King, A.T. Elliott, and Reggie Walker, and the coach, Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week.